Everybody, ooh, the microphone's working well, and it's a big room, so I'll not yell at everybody at 8:30 in the morning. Welcome to our special session this morning on connecting climate change and public health, prioritizing necessary actions to protect public health. This is going to be one of several discussions taking place today, a very exciting annual meeting in general regarding climate change, but especially today we're going to have a lot of discussions about intersectoral action, policy actions, and how public health and climate change policy really intersect. We have the session this morning at 8:30. We have a great 12:30 special session where they're going to be talking about intersectoral action. And then I want to let people also know that at 6:30 tonight, there will be a side meeting, a town hall meeting of the U.S. Global Change Research Program, where we'll be talking about federal actions at the intersection of climate change and policy and having some good discussion and hearing from some of our grantees about that. So I just want to let people know about those activities. So as I was taking my daily 100,000 steps to navigate McCormick Place this morning to get here, I walked by the American Optometry Association and I saw that they were having an eye-opener session. No, they did. I'm not kidding. It's down on the other side of the hallway, and I thought, that's really funny. And I said, I'm worried that that's going to be a big draw and have people here. So I wanted to start just by thanking you for being here at this early morning session.
We're the farsighted.
Thank you. We're the visionaries, right? I want to thank you for being here and also just note that many of you really were eye-openers and were up at 6:30 this morning taking this idea of intersectoral action within the health sector and having an intersectoral meeting of the different sections of the APHA to talk about how we can come together on climate change. And I think that the discussions there are also probably a wonderful example of intersectoral thinking across boundaries about the actions that need to be taken. I want to thank Chris Ray, to start with, who is the organizer of this session. Chris is one of the co-chairs, along with Jenny Miller, of our topic committee on climate change in the environment section, and also to thank the law section, the veterinary public health section, or the veterinary public health SPIG, for organizing this session today. My name is John Balbus, and I am a senior advisor for public health at the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, and I serve as the Health and Human Services Principal for the Global Change Research Program and co-chair of an interagency working group that we have along with George Luber and Julie Turton on climate change and health, and I'm pleased to be your moderator today. And I'm already up to my disclaimer somehow. I also just wanted to mention one other event that's taking place today, because it's not in the program. It was a very late-breaking special session. But at 4:30 today, there's going to be a session with the heads of the National Center for Environmental Health, Pat Bricey, the head of EPA's Office of Research and Development, Tom Burke, and myself representing NIEHS, talking about federal agency visions for the coming future on environmental health. So that's 4:30, and I can't remember the room right now. I think it's 185 AB. So just want to let people know about that since it's not in the program. So what I'd like to do is just to frame our discussion today. We have three really amazing panelists to talk about their experiences in bringing together climate policy and health policy at three levels of organization, at the international level, the federal level, and at the state level. And I thought I would just introduce them briefly first, and then what I like to do is to start by framing the discussion a little bit and providing some context. So we have Dr. Jonathan Patz. Jonathan is the director of the Global Health Institute and the John P. Holton Chair in Health and the Environment at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Many of you know Jonathan. He's been a leader in this field. He was the person who actually got me into this field in a previous generations ago, and has been a longtime IPCC lead author, really helped to bring health to the IPCC and shared in the Nobel Prize because of that. Our next speaker will be Dr. George Luber, who's the Associate Director for Climate Change within the Division of Environmental Hazards and Health Effects within the National Center of Environmental Health at CDC. And George heads the climate change activities and the climate program at CDC, and will be speaking about the work that he's doing there with his BRACE framework. And then our third speaker will be Kimberly Wasserman, who's the Director of Organizing and Strategy and one of the founders of the Little Village Environmental Justice Organization. And Kimberly is wonderful to have her on this panel. She was awarded the 2013 Goldman Environmental Prize for her work in shutting down two of the most polluting coal-fired power plants in the nation that were in her neighborhood in Chicago. And so we'll get to hear about her experiences in doing that. So with that, by way of introduction, let's jump right in. We're going to hold everybody to relatively brief presentations and hopefully have a good discussion at the end. So it's very fitting that, of course, this special session is a special session in an annual meeting whose theme is health in all policies. And so we're really discussing what is the meaning of health in all policies. That's got to be a bit of a buzzword, and I think that getting granular and talking about what does it mean to actually bring public health thinking to other sectoral policies and how is it done is a very important discussion to have. And I just have a definition here that you can read. I like to cite the work that was done in the state of California. I think it's probably the best example of implementation of health in all policies within the United States, done by Linda Rudolph and Julia Kaplan. And actually, Julia Kaplan will be talking about this work that they did in the state of California, actualizing, really implementing health in all policies later on this afternoon. So look for that session as well. So just to start by giving an overview of why climate change as a phenomena and as something that requires a great deal of different kinds of policies to address intersects broadly with public health and broadly with public health policy. This is the summary from the health chapter from the most recent Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, report. And their greatest concerns in terms of health effects were what you can see here, the effects of heat waves and fires. So automatically we start thinking about urban policy, urban heat islands, and of course forest management. Increased risk of undernutrition, we start thinking about urban planning, neighborhood food sources, as well as agricultural policy. Lost work capacity, reduced labor production, we immediately start thinking about occupational health and occupational regulations, industrial practices, and then increased risk of food and waterborne diseases and vector-borne diseases, and that's primary public health. And the conclusion there was that the largest risk will apply in populations that are currently most affected by climate change, climate-related diseases. And so that gets us thinking that we're going to have to focus our climate change adaptation, our climate change related policies, in those places that are already struggling on the health policy side because they are experiencing the greatest burden of disease. And so in fact, the IPCC concluded that the most effective adaptation measures are going to be implementing basic public health measures. So here's part one, where thinking about what we need to do for climate change really intersects directly with thinking about what we need to do in terms of health policy. It's sometimes helpful when we think about adaptation for climate change to put it in a vulnerability framework to think about who is it that we need to protect and where are they. And this is just a quick schematic that I want to walk through very, very briefly because it gives us some ideas of where those policy intersections may be. So when we think about vulnerability for climate change, we think about three components. The first is increased exposure, being in the wrong place at the wrong time, and that could be voluntary, but most of the time it's not voluntary. It has to do with siting, urban planning, discrimination, et cetera. And so it really intersects with social policies, housing policies, transportation policies, et cetera, as well as poverty in general. Increased sensitivity often refers to having an increased response for a given amount of exposure. Sometimes that means that you have an underlying chronic disease like heart disease, diabetes, lung disease, so that starts to intersect with the idea of health disparities and all of the social determinants of health that lead to health disparities and chronic diseases. And then reduced adaptive capacity is the third area, and that has to do with areas of governance and policy very directly. So three different aspects of the things we need to do from a protect public health side and how that relates to climate change and other sectors. Now, there's a whole flip side to this, which the most recent Lancet Commission report, it came out in June, made this very prominent. On the one hand, we know that climate change poses very serious risks to public health and increasing risks as we go through this next century and beyond. But at the same time, the Lancet Commission points out that the actions that are needed to mitigate climate change, to reduce greenhouse gases, often themselves have very powerful and significant health benefits. And so a lot of the primary health goals in terms of reducing NCDs, increasing physical activity, reducing exposure to air pollution are part of climate policy. And so as we direct and try to influence the action that needs to be taken to reduce the extent and severity of climate change, there's a flip side for health as well. This is the choice that we have. So this is a graphic, a map that comes from the IPCC. And on the right side, the darker graph is basically the course we're on. It's actually a little better than the course we're on. But this is the world at the end of the century in terms of temperature rise without policies to influence climate change. And you can see that the global average is somewhere between, in most places, 4-7 degrees Celsius. So that's about 7 to 11, 12 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't have time to talk about all of the implications of a temperature increase of that magnitude, but they're very severe and tend towards the catastrophic in terms of health, food systems, water systems, et cetera. The left side is the potential that we have to avert the right side, and that is the temperature increase with substantial climate change policies, and that's keeping the overall increase in temperature down to around 2 degrees. And you know what we're going through right now in the run-up to the Conference of Parties, the 21st Conference of Parties in Paris, the binding decisions, the national commitments that are being made to reduce greenhouse gases. This is the policy decision that's being made right now, and as we'll hear, health has a very important voice in that decision. So this is a little bit hard to read, and I'm sorry, but I just wanted to make some kind of 40,000-foot overview to show that we have kind of four quadrants. We have policies related to health protection and climate adaptation. We have policies related to reducing greenhouse gases or climate mitigation. We obviously have health policies that we're all very familiar with. And I split health into public health and healthcare delivery. That's a real distinction in this country. In other countries, it's not quite as real a distinction. But it's to separate out the roles of the health sector as an economic sector, as a contributor to climate change, and as an economic actor and an industrial actor, if you will, related to the resilience of communities from the kind of public health policies that we often talk about. And hopefully you all can read the fine print. I got influenced by walking past the Optometry Association this morning. You can check your visual acuity, and if you walk out to go there, I understand. And this is just to give you an idea of the magnitude of this choice. This is a global scale assessment of the health co-benefits of climate mitigation. This is not even the full scale get us to 2 degrees maximum achievable climate mitigation. This is kind of a mid-range estimate. And I just show it to point out that we're talking about millions of deaths saved annually by the middle and on to the end of the century every year by the air pollution reductions that would come from more stringent reduction in fossil fuel combustion primarily. So some examples of where climate policy and health policy come together. I think one of the most obvious examples at the real highest international level is the discussion that's going on right now to finalize the Sustainable Development Goals of the UN. I've got the 17 goals up here, and of course, one of them is a health goal. And so the SDG health goals are going to establish tons of health policies, and health goals are kind of, in the SDGs, are kind of like they were in the MDGs a lot. They're reduced childhood mortality and end tuberculosis and AIDS and all of those typical global health goals. Their goal 3.9 is specifically about reducing environmental exposures. It's a little sad that the health goal doesn't have anything about the sustainability of the health sector itself in it, but we'll just follow up with that. Of course, there is a climate action goal, and this is primarily about increasing adaptive capacity and resilience in the countries of the world and achieving greenhouse gas reduction goals. But then in the middle there are the places where intersectoral action takes place. So there are goals related to energy supply. For a lot of the world, this is about giving access to clean energy, which is a huge health goal. And yet it has to be merged with climate policy so that we do it in such a way that we don't exacerbate the climate change problem and undo all of the poverty reduction and health benefits of providing clean energy, just as one example. In interest of time, I'm just going to race through. I just want to make a plug that for those of you involved in this world, what gets measured gets done, and so the real rubber hitting the road of things like the SDGs are the indicators that are selected in achieving each of these goals, and this is a real opportunity to bring together health and sustainable development. And so we've been working with the WHO at NIEHS to analyze what are potential indicators that achieve this synergy between climate policy or sustainable development policy and health policy. And this is things, you know, if you think about it, it's not rocket science. It's things like urban particulate matter concentrations as a merger of transportation policy, energy policy, and a health goal. It's things like ride share, mode share in transportation. Putting indicators, measuring as we urbanize, measuring how many people are walking and biking versus taking personal transportation, things like that. Another example of international policies, obviously where these things come together, is the issue of global fossil fuel subsidies. We still subsidize fossil fuel extraction at the rate of $500 billion per year. That's a lot of money. In some cases, that's actually going to clean energy access for the poor, even though it's fossil fuel. It's less polluting and less health harming. You know, some of this is going to things like providing LPG to the poorest billion people in the world. There's some debate. That's an interesting discussion, whether that's a good thing to be doing, a bad thing to be doing. But, you know, that's one place of intersection. But a lot of this is just about petroleum extraction. An example at the national scale came to us from our Surgeon General, who was even speaking about this, I think, in the opening session. This is just a quote from the most recent call to action, Step It Up, that the Surgeon General's office put up. This is not a climate goal. This is a health goal. This is about physical activity, a core policy of our health administration. But it points out that communities that are designed to be walkable have the potential to reduce air pollution and greenhouse gases. And then one of the best examples where climate policy and health policy, controversial example, but a very clear example where these things are coming together, is in the California Global Warming Solutions Act of 2006, where the state of California mandated that revenues that were obtained from selling carbon credits, so this is a carbon cap and trade policy, and that the revenues obtained from that have to go back into investments in the most disadvantaged communities for poverty alleviation, for walkable infrastructure. So there's a lot of fine-tuning to a policy like this, but it's a clear opportunity for this kind of intersection. So in closing, I didn't spend a lot of time talking about the scale and urgency of climate change. I think we all recognize that this is a problem that's whose solution is coming late in the game. So there is unbelievable urgency to be taking action, and the world is recognizing this increasingly. This country is recognizing this increasingly. But the point is that this provides both challenges and great opportunities for us as public health people and all levels of government. Absolutely all levels of government have important contributions, and we'll hear about that. The second is that climate change adaptation, the things that we need to do for climate change, have been pointed out to align very, very closely with what our primary public health goals are, reducing health disparities, reducing the diseases of poverty, and addressing social determinants of health is all primary climate change adaptation as well. And then lastly, climate change mitigation policies really provide multi-sectoral approaches, a health and all policies approach to addressing the 7 million people that die every year from air pollution, indoor and outdoor combined. So with that, I'm going to close and welcome Dr. Patz to the podium and look forward to the presentations. Thanks very much.